Everyone, welcome back. You're hanging out with Richard Land at Set for Success. But hey, you knew that already, didn't you? And I know that you know that because you listened to that wonderful intro that's put on for me. Even I sometimes listen to it just to see what it says. But hopefully it was a good one today. I know. You got to understand, I'm just kidding a little bit. But what are we going to be doing Set for Success Day? Well, you know we're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career, your life. And we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time. This time it was supposed to be two people. You're listening in. You know who you are that didn't make it. So it's going to be one person, just saying. We're going to keep that conversation going. We're going to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. Listen, I want you to say that to yourself right now or out loud. Scream it in your car if that's what you need to do. Or sit in your kitchen, stand up and say, hey, I deserve to be successful. You do. Whatever success is to you, whether it's in your business, in your career, in your personal life, you deserve to be successful. You know that I love quotes. I always start the show off with a Set for Success quote, and this is my quote for today. And hopefully I don't butcher it. I've had a few where I've had some trouble with, but hopefully I do okay here. The key to successful leadership today is influence, not authority. Now, that was actually by Kenneth Blanchard. You don't know who Kenneth Blanchard is? He's an American author, has extensive writing career, includes over 60 published books, most of them being co-authored. He's probably best known for the book, The 1 Minute Manager, which sold over 13 million copies and translated into many languages around the world. Heck, you know, I was actually thinking about that book for a moment. No, I don't have Kenneth on the show today. Sorry about that. But I read that book back in 1997 or 1998, somewhere around there. And I was working within a field of project management at the time. So it's probably still a very relevant book for today. Leadership and management author, as we just talked about Kenneth, understands that leadership isn't a one-way street. The successful project leader doesn't bark orders and then sit back and expect them to be followed blindly. That is not leadership. That's totalitarianism. And the heck, if you're running a business right now and that's your approach to it, I suspect you probably have a few very unhappy people. Even if the such top-down authority is adhered to, it will basically crush creative thinking and innovation within your organization. And in today's world, innovation and creativity are extremely important. Real leaders are not separate from their teams. They might be tasked to get things done, to do plans and everything, and responding to issues as they arise, but they're not motivating people through fear or through strength. They build relationships of mutual trust. That's basically how leadership actually works these days. This creates buy-in for a project. It also influences the team to work harder towards their common goal. It's that influence that is mightier than authority, because influence addresses the entire person. The project becomes their project. It becomes their success, or success becomes their success. And isn't that what you really want? You want to have your teams actually own the work that they're doing, own the projects that they're working on. It's their project, not the person who's trying to run it all the time. Here's a little bit of recipe for you, and I want you to repeat after me. Like you, know you, trust you, work with you, get stuff done, right? Like you, know you, trust you, work with you equals get stuff done. That is a simple recipe for success. And if you learn how to do it well, you'll always be able to use it in anything that you do. Project management is one of those professions that continues to grow and morphs as the demands for the get things done on time, on budget, with the available resources continue to be a challenge. In my days as a senior project manager and eventually a vice president of strategic planning, these were always the constraints that we had and we had to contend with on a regular basis. I can only imagine how project management world is coping today. So you can probably imagine right away what we're going to be doing, because as I gave the show some thought, I wondered who could come in and share their business, their life journey, their career with us. And you can probably guess I'm going to be chatting with at least one project manager, not two. Those people are forever living in a space of getting things done. Today on Set for Success, I'm glad to actually have somebody from the Project Management Institute, Michael Hanna. He's Vice President of Operations. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you.
I'm actually glad to have you here and to be on the show overall. Michael, to get things going and everything, why don't you actually tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
My name is Michael Hanna. I'm currently the VP of Operations of PMI Manitoba. I've been a volunteer since 2007. I had a great journey with PMI Manitoba. I started as a volunteer on one of the conferences committees, and And later on that, this is probably my 7th year on the board of PMI.
So you've been actually serving this nonprofit organization for a while.
Yes.
I know before we kicked off the show, we had the opportunity to have a little personal chat. And you're not from around here, are you?
No, I'm originally from Egypt. I moved here around in the year 2006. And I started a career with MTS. Now it's called Bell MTS.
Okay.
And I started as a project manager, and I climbed up the ladder to be a manager of the project management office.
So. Oh, okay. So you're part of the PMO office.
I am, yeah.
I didn't even know that about you. You're like the man or the person. Maybe that's the better word to use. You're the person.
I'm the person.
You're the person.
Yeah. You know, with other persons. And
with other good. Let's compliment those people. But that's a really cool journey. I mean, because if you moved here in 2006 and now it's 2019, how many years you been here?
That's a good question. 13 or 14 years?
There you go. Yeah. I wanted to see how good you were at math. That was your math.
Put me on the spot.
That was your math question, man. I got to check the numbers. I just didn't want to do the calculation myself. That's the truth. I used to be good at math, but then, I don't know, I got old or something along that lines. It sounds like fascinating. I can only imagine that stepping into a role coming, from Egypt in 2006, I mean, no doubt to be some challenges and everything. Out of curiosity, what was your education background before you came to Canada?
Yeah, so my education is engineering and electrical to be specific, and my minor was in communication electronics.
Okay. So, did you work while you were still in Egypt too?
Yes, I did work in the wireless or mobility in general. When I came here, it was a natural fit for me to work in a telecom kind of
The telecom type environment, because that's good that it connected that way for you, because I have the privilege of working both with senior professionals, but also have the privilege of working with new Canadians or immigrants looking to make their way in our country. And that alignment is not always there for them. So it's good that you did that, actually.
Absolutely. It's not easy. It's not easy to come in a different country with a different culture and try to live and basically, be successful in that country and learn about the culture, learn about how jobs are done here. Definitely project management is the same everywhere, basically, but in other in every environment, the risks are different. They're similar in a way, but they are kind of different in terms of
Well, methodologies, PMI, we're going to talk a bit about PMI, project management methodology, a little later on in the show. I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a bit about Project Management Institute and what that's all about, but then also the lives of a project manager. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Hanna. We've been talking a little bit. Well, we're just kicking off. Let's talk about project management, because that's really your expertise, right? And the fact that I now know you're part of a PMO, project management office, I think there's just an incredible amount that you can actually share with our listeners about what a project manager does, right? And maybe that's where we start. So what does a project manager do? Let's just talk about the career or the role, the type of responsibility.
A project manager is, in simple words, make things happen. And
make things happen, get things done, right? Make things. We got to be careful with that one. Back in the day when I used to be in the PM world, also, we used to talk about the beat of the drum, right? Get it done.
Exactly.
And we would literally do that in our offices. Get it done. And we would start to pound like that. And I think some people thought we were weirdos, but it sort of worked out well. Go ahead. You just get things done.
Yeah, basically the project manager is the person who beats the drum, who's the one that basically pull the people together to deliver on a project, whether big or small, is basically the person that really drives the business kind of objectives and put them into make them reality.
Yes. Yeah. And sort of tying back to that strategic plan and stuff, right?
Exactly.
Within an organization. We often say within the project managed world, there's a beginning, middle, and end, right, to everything that you do. So when you talk about, maybe you can give some examples on your own life or just sort of the area that people can work in within project management, because you're part of the PMI, you must be talking to a lot of people. So where do you see project management being used within the industry itself?
Oh, project management, you can apply it in every part of our life. from IT, from telecom, from infrastructure, even from personal life. Even you want to plan a trip or you want to, you know, I remember actually, this is a good example.
Yeah, go for it.
I was interviewing one of the project managers for a project manager's job. Three years ago, I came from, and I asked the question. I said, give me an example where you applied a project management kind of, you know, methodologies and things, and just give me something. It doesn't have to be business related. And basically, the person gave me a good example that actually stuck in my head. And
Can you share?
So basically, he said there was a death in the family, and I had to.
So sad.
And I had to, as a junior project manager, I had to apply my project management methodology into this, and by building a budget, by, you know, huddling the family together, and basically stakeholder engagement. Informal way, and reaching out just from planning to the execution of the funeral and the celebration of a person's life. And that was a really good example, actually, that I was impressed that actually people even take it after work and apply. So it's more like, in my mind, it's more of a, it's more than a career. It's actually a life. When what you learn from project management is you can apply in every day, in everything you can do.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a really good example. I mean, because anything from planning a vacation to building a house, to buying a car, to a certain degree, probably even cooking, you know, but then you've talked about some bigger things too, like infrastructure projects or technology projects or anything. Out of curiosity, because you have a background in engineering, electrical engineering, I think you said, mm-hmm. What is your specialty for the types of projects that you've been involved in throughout your career of your career arc? Right.
Majority of my career, I've been exposed to infrastructure, big infrastructure project. When I say infrastructure, mainly telecom infrastructure, building cell sites, building cellular networks from the core to all the way to, you know, the cell sites that you can, that provide services and coverage to people.
Yeah, yeah. So it improves customers' connectivity, which is pretty big today.
Absolutely. So I had the privilege to introduce the LTE network to Manitoba,
okay,
which is a 4G. Called, it's another word for it. It's 4G. So
yeah, and there's big talk now about the new G one, which is
5G.
Yes, yeah,
right.
Not G5, 5G. I said that to my son one day, and he looked at me and said, "Dad, no, you got it backwards." But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
So you can definitely apply project management to lots of the infrastructure project, IT project. I also have been exposed to some IT project. Right. Think about billing, how we can bill a customer on or how can we provide a mobile app that serves customer, even serves the public, right?
Oh, you know, like you look at technology changeover, like technology, we would all agree becomes obsolete, right? Mm-hmm. Quickly. You look at a company that says, say they have 1,000 employees, right? I mean, I know you guys are bigger, right? But you think about refreshing all their desktops. Mm-hmm. Like, we're now going to get rid of everybody's personal computers, and we're going to give everybody laptops or notebooks. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a project in itself, right? It has a beginning, a middle, and end. And that's an infrastructure project in a technology perspective.
Absolutely.
I've done tons of those. I've done lots of software stuff too in the past. These days is more strat planning stuff. And those are projects too, beginning, mm-hmm. middle, and end, right?
Absolutely.
You know, all the way we go. Now, you mentioned about Project Management Institute. Mm-hmm. You're presently the Vice President of Operations of Project Management Institute. And that's a fairly significant large organization, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about PMI.
Yeah, PMI is basically the leading nonprofit organization for, like, as an association of project management. Project Management Institute is the organization that promotes and sets the standards for how a project manager can do their work, their daily work. And as a PMI Manitoba chapter, we kind of are part of the of that global
organization. It's fairly large.
And really our objectives in Manitoba to elevate the project management profession in Manitoba and provide learning events and things for project manager, networking opportunities, be able to help and mentor people and provide, you know, certification path learning opportunities and things. Really, that's kind of what we try to do to help them.
It's a fairly significant organization, right, in terms of the things that it does. And I just thought I'd bring it in now because I know that you've been involved in this organization and I know that there's many different types of career paths. before we talk a little bit more about that, I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break, and when we'll come back, I think if we can maybe dive a little bit into what is the career path of a project manager. This is Richard Lennon. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Michael Hanna today, and we're talking about project management and the whole idea of the profession. It turns out that, you know, Michael came to Canada, you know, got a really cool career going, is now a project manager, PMO office, running the PMO office, if I get it correctly. So project management office, which is pretty cool in itself. You know, I can't help but wonder, Michael, you know, what are the key challenges that a project manager has? Because there must be some pretty, you know, hefty challenges that they need to overcome on a regular basis.
Oh, absolutely. So having the buy-in from people to do the work, having the team basically deliver on what the plan would be, that would be definitely one of the challenges that a lot of big segment of the project managers face today, and influence how to influence the people to do the work for you, especially in a matrix organization or a weak matrix organization where, you know, you don't have the resources working for you as a project manager. Hmm. Wake up, project manager. You don't have all the resources, right? So basically you're begging for the resources. You're hiring resources to be on your project from different teams, from different organizations. It could be somebody from across the organization from a different team that you've never dealt with. So yeah, that's one of the challenges.
Yeah, and people get assigned to different projects, right? And you mentioned matrix organization, a weak matrix organization. So I'm going to assume that the listeners might not be familiar with those terms. Okay, sorry, listeners. But I mean, if you think about in terms of organization, the standard organization, operational organization, the structure is basically, you know, somebody's in charge, there's operational areas, each operational area is broken down to your key operations, technology, mm-hmm. human resources, manufacturing operations, et cetera, finance, and you exist in there. But right. Then in comes the project, which cuts across the standard organization.
Yep.
Is that sort of what you're meaning by?
That's exactly what I meant, is just cutting across. You're hiring free people from different groups, and you're expecting them to do the work, and yeah, they have other work to do, especially operational work.
They have their day jobs.
Exactly.
And plus, then now they're being... Okay, so what do you do yourself? You know, what are some of the lessons learned that you have in terms of how do you motivate people or influence people to actually work on your project?
Right. So I think you started with something at the beginning of the show here,
sure,
by
sure
saying that. Make them own the work.
Oh, yeah,
make
okay
them build the
yeah
plan.
Yeah, the sense of you actually own it. You
absolutely
tend to be,
yeah. It's the sense of ownership is what drives and motivates people to do the work. It's not you. It's not, you know, the CEO of the company. It is basically when they own the work, they will do it. And when we get them to commit to dates, then that's when the work gets done.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So how, but then that's an interesting, imposes an interesting question in itself, right? How do you work with people so they have a sense of ownership? I do a lot of facilitation, and I deal with this issue all the time, right? And I do a lot of strat planning, mm-hmm. and people will say things like, well, no, you do this for me, or why don't you put this together for me? Right. And at that point in time, I know it's another person's monkey. Right. And don't know if you're familiar with other people's monkeys,
yep,
but basically they're handing it over to you to take care of. But what do you do to actually, for our listeners, to maybe provide a lesson learned that, you know, how do you work on with people to get them to achieve ownership within a project that you're working on?
Simply is by getting them to chip in with the idea. So if this is my idea, then I'll be the first one to want to implement it. So the key there is to keep them engaged. How do we keep them? How to keep the project team engaged? That's the biggest question, I think, in my mind. Making them feel part of the team. The way you approach the team is not the way, like, it's, you're not super directive and can say, well, this is the way it's going to be. Bottom line is, you can build the best project schedule, you know, in the world, but good luck getting it executed. It's really, you have to have that collaboration with the team. You have to foster innovation, foster the good ideas, engage the team in a way that they feel that this is my work. I'm going to have to get it done. And that's really how it's a secret sauce is really leadership.
Yeah.
It all draws down to leadership.
Because a lot of methodologies is really about the tasks that you have to do, right? When you talk to people with methodologies, like it's like these different areas that they have to learn, and they treat it, and this is my own opinion, right? They treat it from a management style or a task-driven side that, well, I must do A, B, C, and that. But then people, right? Yeah. And it's often said that, you know, work would be fun if you didn't have to deal with people. Like then, and it's a weird quote, but think about it for a moment, right? You know, like who's your thorn in your side, right?
Right.
Yeah. So how do you go about engaging people?
It's simple, as simple as building good relations with the people. So you walk in the room and you don't know the people. I think it all drills down to starting with how we engage the people. How what's my body language when I meet someone for the first time? Because really, you know, first impression remains. Somebody said that. I can't remember who said it in the past, but that really is something I kind of learned. Is the first impression you give to the person on your team. And that personal connection that you will have in the first time remains matter what you do.
And people will make that decision in seconds.
Absolutely.
That's bizarre, right? Yeah. Like if you look at the work in the area of social psychology and sociology and social economics, these are big things in my side. people will make that decision like within seconds of meeting you. They'll decide what you're like, whether it's true or not, mm-hmm. which, you know, how do you keep people engaged?
Right.
I go back to the, I always walk in with a simple equation. I shared it right at the beginning of my monologue. I share it now. Like you, know you, trust you, work with you. Yeah. And I use that one with clients. I use it when coaching with people. I use it in interviews and discussions because I literally repeat that to myself before I even walk into any engagement. And I know straight up that you need to create a situation where, yeah, these people sort of like you. These people sort of know you, mm-hmm. right? They have a sense of who you are. Then you can build trust, right? You build mm-hmm. trust, then you can now work with people. And that's what I'm thinking that engagement's all about.
Absolutely. You nailed it on the head.
Oh, there we go. I threw it in there. Okay, let's make sure listeners recognize this. I threw it in there, not my guest. No. You know, I learned that a long time ago, and I just think it's so important. It does create a very interesting conversation that maybe we can have in the next segment, because I'd like to talk to you about this one. I can't imagine, as a project manager, which is really about influence, because if people don't directly report to you, they indirectly report to you. I mean, correct. They can be assigned to you and they report to you that way, mm-hmm. but they generally have like an operations manager, somebody who's actually their manager, their team lead, or their director, or their vice, whoever it is, right? So to me, I think one of the biggest challenges would be delegation. Yeah, I'm getting nods here.
Yep.
So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how do you deal with delegation, and then we're going to talk a bit about how do you train yourself as a project manager. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Hanging out with Michael Hanna, and we've been talking about project management career. And Michael, I thought it was fascinating how we started talking a bit about really getting things done through people. You know, mm-hmm. like and helping them sort of own their portion of the process, their portion of the project, and really that has a lot to do with trust and building engagement and those kind of things. I can't help but I hear a lot when talking to different people in their careers about their concerns around delegation. And like that's still a big word. And during the break, we were just chatting, like that was an issue 20, 30 years ago. That was an issue 10 years ago. It's an issue today too. So how does a PM, when you don't have somebody who they, in essence, report you on a project, so it's indirectly. How do you move through the whole delegation framework?
I think it all drills down to the trust. So trusting some other people to do things on your behalf and driving things for you. I'll give you a really good example. Actually, I've seen that one of the good PMs in my company, when I attended one of their daily scrums, I found actually the PM is not running the scrum. And when they ask, okay, why is somebody else, so-and-so, is running the scrum? And the PM actually gave me a really nice kind of reply and say, well, I delegated that that to that person to run it for me. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Okay, so tell me why. And and that respected PM basically said to me, well, if I got somebody who's motivated, who owns it, he's going to display even more passion than me to do it. So why don't I just delegate that task to him and just let him run with it?
And just let it go. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to share a story too. And I learned this from one of my peers out of Vancouver years ago when I was a senior manager in an organization. And then I adapted it. And what she used to do was for all meetings, she would actually have a different person run the meetings. And we did a lot of project meetings. And this is a fascinating thing. So I adapted something I learned from somebody else. And I started doing that. Initially, my staff hated it, right? interesting thing that happened that over time was as they ran the meetings and they all rotated who ran the meetings, their skill set improved and the workload improved. Not only that, this was the really cool thing. They started being asked on the national meetings and started being asked to run national meetings, and they couldn't believe it. They were floored. So I'm just saying, like, the delegation of a task that you think you need to do, maybe you don't need to do it.
Yeah, you know what? You know, I've done it. Actually, I've got another good example. Actually.
Oh, give me another one. This is awesome.
As a manager of the project management office, actually, I've done this too. I, the staff meeting, the recurring staff meeting, I asked who can chair it and rotated the chairing. And I said, here's the key things that I want it focused on. And you know what? You've got a 15 minutes of topic of your mind. If you want to talk to the team, then I'm giving you that, you know, opportunity to guide the meeting in the topic you want to cover. And it's funny because it was a lot of fun because some of the people were just talking about games. I said, oh, that's interesting.
Well, there we go.
You remember Clash of Clans?
Yeah.
And we had that in a certain point in time playing as a group, Clash of Clans together and having a clan for us. It was like a fun.
And it was a fun thing, right? It created a little bit of camaraderie.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're going to share ideas. And by the way, this is for the listeners, right? I love sharing stuff with guests too, right? Like we're having coffee, right? One of the things that I did years ago was everybody had to come to a meeting with a compliment for somebody else. And we used to do these round table compliments, right? Mm-hmm. And fascinating what happens over time, because what ends up happening is people get to know each other and outside of their just normal thing, or they start to realize that day that they were having a bad day at work, oh my gosh, their peer helped them out, right? They came, you know, this was a bad day for me, but Nancy or Fred or whoever, Jaspreet or whoever stepped in and they took care of this for me. And I just want to say thank you. And fascinating what happens to a team when you do that, right? So I just thought I'd throw that in.
Absolutely.
Throw that in too. Listen, cool. I can imagine that, I mean, obviously you're part of the Project Management Institute and the stuff that you're doing. You must host like regular ongoing meetings and stuff too. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh yeah. So the objective really of the Project Management Office, as I mentioned to you, is just to elevate the project management career and help project managers do better job in their day-to-day life. And not only that, just provide that career kind of path and growth opportunities for them and network with other project managers and other like people who do same work, just different disciplines. So definitely one of our objectives is just to provide those learning opportunities. We've got lots going on.
Yeah. You hold monthly meetings, I gather.
We do have monthly meetings. And
are they evening meetings or lunch and learns?
It's a mix of, you know, lunchtime and some of them are dinners.
And can anybody attend?
Absolutely. Just go to pmimanitoba.org and you can find all the events there. Funny you mentioned that because we've got the conference coming up.
Yeah, I was reading up a little bit that you've got a fall conference or something coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we've got the Reignite Fall Conference. It's at the Canadiens Polo Park on November 20th and 21st. And really the theme is how to help people learn more about Agile and, you know, new add more tools into their toolbox.
For project managers.
Or
for people who are interested in project management. You threw around a few very big words today. You talked about Agile. You talked about Scrum sessions. You mentioned matrix and weak matrix organizations. It sounds to me like those are very popular in industry today, but are very much areas that a project manager or somebody interested in project, or maybe you don't see yourself as a project manager, but you're doing projects, need to learn about. What are some of those things?
Absolutely. So recently, PMI Global has acquired Discipline Agile, and the plan is to promote Agile and even the tools, what's beyond Agile. Like, I think the CEO of PMI Global was talking about like PMI 4.0 and you know, what is the plan even after Agile era. So Agile itself, it's been in
Been around forever.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So. A lot of people talk about it as a methodology. It's really more of a philosophy and an approach to getting right. stuff done. I learned about Agile back in the latter part of the 90s and been using it for a long time, right? But I do find it's quite interesting that you come from, like, say, 1999 and you forward, to 2019. Mm-hmm. It's like it's really out there right now. Like, people are really talking about this as an approach to getting projects done.
Right. And it brings a wide, spectrum of tools and things. And there's no one flavor of Agile today.
No,
every
no,
organization have their own flavors, and yeah. they build their organization, they build their methodology around Agile and basically trying to build their own tools and way of doing things, running the meetings and their templates and all that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah, and we could go. Well, it's that difference between predictive planning and adaptive planning, right?
Right.
Yeah, you're shocked that I know all this stuff, eh? and predictive being more traditional and adaptive. A lot of language came out of the 90s. But, and just sort of trying to merge those things together.
Right.
These traditional organizations have very predictive approaches. Engineering, like, you're building a bridge. I'm sorry, but there's certain things that I don't want you to do agile, right? And you might not like that, me saying this. I want to make sure that bridge stays up, and that might be a bit more predictive.
And true.
But, true, but if you're working yeah. on maybe a technology project, you can maybe focus on a more adaptive or agile approach.
Absolutely. It all depends on what type of project that you have. And
away you go.
And exactly.
And that's the type of stuff that you learn through the PMI, I gather.
Absolutely.
Michael, you're an awesome guest. I'm just thoroughly enjoyed hanging out with you today. If you had a final message or idea for our listeners, what might it be?
Learn, continue to learn, and look up for opportunities, network, communicate better, engage your team.
Good. Communicate better, right? And isn't that what people want? They want to have a meaningful conversation. They want to be engaged. Michael, thank you for hanging out with me today. Awesome.
Thanks, Richard.
Awesome guest. Listen, to our listeners, you know what I'm going to say? Well, if you do hang out with me a little bit, you know what I'm going to say. If you have an idea, a thought, a question, anything, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.